Tonya. I'm Karen. I'm a resident here and have been asked many months ago to give a little Dharma talk. Well, so I've been thinking, what am I going to talk about? What do I know about this practice? And just so came to my mind that it happened that I've been Tenzin for the last 7 or 8 sessions now. So I thought, why not talk about Dogen's teaching on being the Tenzo instead of Zazen or other more fancy aspects of our practice. I remember when I was asked to be Tenzo for the first time, it was in 2009, the Kobe Memorial Zazen. Just so happened that most of the residents were gone and they were kind of on a holiday, and it was a very small Zazen, and I was like, oh, nice, I'm going to be Tenzo, I'm just going to try that. And just so happened to, there was a very kind and nice Sangha member up here that I told that I was going to be Tenzo. It was Jerry Halpern, some of you will know him. And he said, Karen, that is very nice that you're going to be Tenzo. Then he went to the library and pulled out a book in which Dogen gave the instructions to the Tenzo. It is called the Tenzo Kyoko Instructions, which was written in 1237. So he gave me the book and I started reading it, and let me share a few of those tidbits in that, because I found them quite amusing. There's one that says, in deciding the morning and noon meals, the amount of food and number of dishes, the Tenzo should consult the other officers. The 6 officers are the administrator, the assistant administrator, the treasurer, the disciplinarian, the Tenzo, and the head caretaker. After the menu is decided, posted on boards by the abbot's residence and the study hall. I kind of was glad that we didn't have a disciplinarian anymore, although sometimes I think we should have one. But I did get into the habit of posting the menu on some walls, so that was helpful. Then another quote is that, for the Tenzo, the mind which finds the way actualizes itself through working with rolled up sleeves. How interesting. I quickly figured it out. That is a lot of work chopping 150 carrots or something like that. So it was also interesting to see the way-seeking mind in a different context, because I had a talk with Michael before he left about the way-seeking mind, and it was all very esoteric and very nice, but we never brought it in relation to being Tenzo, to actually doing something in the kitchen. So that was a new one for me. Then there was a very funny one. In preparing the food, the Tenzo is responsible for examining it to ensure that it is clean. Do not waste grains of rice when draining the rinsing water. In olden times, the cloth bag was used as a filter when draining the rinse water. When the rice is placed in the iron cooking pot, take care of it so that rats do not fall into it, or idlers just hang around poking at it. Now, I wasn't that concerned about rats because we have these fancy new electric rice cookers, but the idlers did hang around at times, so that was more of a problem getting those out of the kitchen. Another quote that was very useful in the end was that one. So, do not despair or complain about the quantity of the materials. Throughout the day and night, practice the coming and going of things as arising in the mind turning and displaying itself as things. It took me a while to understand that, because quite a few times I was tempted to just let everything be in the kitchen and take a trip down to Safeway and get more supplies. Because, of course, instead of the 5 people that signed up, we had 20 people showing up, and sometimes it can be tricky. But then I quickly learned how to make use of things I found and how to stretch what should have been a vegetable stir fry into a large pot of soup. So that was a very helpful quote. Another one, regard the cooking pot as your own head, the water as your own lifeblood. That's a nice one. Now, in order to illustrate the next quote, which is a little bit more profound than rats falling in a rice cooking pot, I wish everybody takes a leaf fresh from our garden, a piece of kale, Oh, chickens love it too. So nice to share with the chickens. Now, this quote regarding the kale says the following. Take up a green vegetable leaf and turn it into a 16-foot golden body. Take the 16-foot golden body and turn it into a green leaf. This is the miraculous transformation, a work of Buddha that benefits all sentient beings. What a koan that is for the Tenzo. So what does it mean to take up a green vegetable leaf and turn it into a 16-foot golden body? The 16-foot golden body, I assume, is the body of the Buddha, the golden body of the Tathagata, the golden body of suchness. It includes the heaven and it encompasses the earth. It transcends both sacred and mundane. On the tips of 100,000 weeds, the marvelous mind of Nirvana. Now, weeds are images of defilement and delusion. So, on the tips of 100,000 weeds can be found the marvelous mind of Nirvana. This is the marvelous mind of Nirvana that the Buddha was talking about in one of his talks at Vulture Peak. I think the story goes as follows. He was giving a talk to thousands of his followers. He went out and picked up a flower. He held it up and twirled it in his hands. And among his thousands of followers, there was only one named Mahakashyapa who smiled and blinked. The Buddha then said, I hold in my hands the marvelous mind of Nirvana, the exquisite teachings of form and emptiness. No, the exquisite teachings of formless form. And I now hand it over to Mahakashyapa. So what happened? What did Mahakashyapa see in that green thing that nobody else saw? What did the Buddha give to Mahakashyapa? What was transmitted and what was received in the end? Well, similarly, Dogen, instead of a nice flower, he's a little bit more practical and takes up some green leaves. But it's the same question. On the tips of 1,000 weeds, the mind of Nirvana. Well, I found a nice quote from a wonderful book by Uchiyama Roshi. The book is called From the Zen Kitchen to Enlightenment. And he says, even when handling just one single leaf of green, do so in such a way that the leaf manifests the fullness of its potential, which in turn allows the illumination of Buddha to radiate through it. This is the power of functioning whose nature is incapable of being grasped with a rational mind, and one which operates without hindrance in a most natural way. At the same time, this power operates in our lives to clarify and settle activities beneficial to all living things. It came to my mind that if you understand Dogen's metaphysics of cooking, you understand the metaphysics of life. It is not about isolating yourself, it's about living in this world, about cooking a meal, about eating a meal, about cleaning your teeth, about raising a child, driving a car, having a job, having a relationship. In other words, it's about the 10,000 things that take place from morning until evening each day of our lives. Yet somehow we seem to struggle with those ordinary activities. It's much harder than sitting zazen at times. So Uchiyama continues and says, it is not so clear, it is not so beneficial to either self or other. Now, what is the reason for that? The reason for it is separation, the illusion of separateness, the illusion that our self is separate and distinct from the rest of the universe, the illusion that our self is separate from the green vegetable leaf in our hands, from the marvelous mind of Nirvana that resides on top of it, from the 16-foot golden body of the Buddha, from your lover, from your parents, from your children, from the people of Iran and Syria, from this great earth itself. They are not one and one and one and one. They're not separate. It's just one great pearl. So Dogen speaks about intimacy, the whole body and mind intimacy. But when we think of intimacy, we usually think about some kind of unity that quite often blinds us and deafens us and that renders us non-existent. Now, the Buddha way is beyond being and non-being, beyond existence and non-existence, beyond the sacred and the mundane. We just chanted in Japanese the no eye, no ears, no tongue, no body, no mind. And quite often understand that as intimacy, but this is only one side, because we also have the eyes, our ears, our nose, our tongue, our body and mind. These are just two sides of one truth, two aspects of the truth. Now, what is that kind of truth? It's neither form nor emptiness, it's neither sacred nor mundane, it's neither heaven nor hell. The intimacy that Dogen speaks of is the whole body and mind intimacy. And Dogen says it over and over again. He says when you're seeing form with the whole body and mind, hearing sound with the whole body and mind, then only then one understands it intimately. Take the 16-foot golden body and turn it into a vegetable leaf. This is a miracle, transforming the leaf into the 16-foot golden body of thusness. Thusness, what is thusness? It's this very momentness. There's no before, there's no after. It is this one moment that contains 100,000 million eons. It is past, it is present, it is future, it is all at once. And it arrives as it leaves, simultaneously. This is the miraculous transformation that the work of a Buddha that benefits all sentient beings. And this includes yourself. Do we understand that when Dogen tells us to transform this leaf, that he's not speaking about any kind of eminent master, any ancestors and Buddhas of the past, or Maitreya, future Buddhas? He talks about you. He talks about your own life. Your own life with all the blemishes that looks much more like a weed than anything else, but on top of the weed there is this marvelous mind of Nirvana. It is wonderful to bring yourself to this present moment, be it in the sendo or be it in the kitchen, the green leaf or a carrot. Dogen also says to the Tenzo, and I'm quoting him again from the book, in preparing food, never view it from the perspective of usual mind or on the basis of feeling tones. Taking up a blade of grass, erect magnificent monasteries, turn the wheel of reality within a grain of dust. If you only have wild grasses with which to make a broth, do not disdain them. If you have ingredients for a creamy soup, do not be delighted. Where there is no attachment, there can be no aversion. Do not be careless with poor ingredients, and do not depend on fine ingredients to do your work for you, but work with everything with the same sincerity. In other words, always, always, always have the utmost respect. We can say the same thing about sentient beings. When you're talking to a beggar in the street or talking to the President of the United States, it should be in the same way, with the same respect. But that is, of course, not what happens. We bet our pants talking to the President of the United States, and we look down our noses when talking to the beggar in the street. Dogen continues. If you do not do so, then it is like changing your behavior according to the status of the person you meet. This is not how a student of the way is. Whether it is a child, someone lying on the deathbed, a peer, a superior, a junior, each and everyone deserves the same respect. If it can start here, it can go to the 10,000 things. It can go to every tree, every blade of grass, every animal, every enemy. If you can see that way, you can understand the essential principle of this incredible Dharma, the essential teachings of the great diamond net of Indra, where everything interpenetrates with everything else. Everything is mutually causal. We share the same causality. What you do and what happens to you are the same things. All of it is samsara. All of it is nirvana. Samsara is precisely nirvana. Nirvana is precisely samsara. They are not separate things. Now, then how can we doubt this incredible teaching of Dogen when he takes us into the kitchen and says, "Hey, look! Chopping this carrot is a manifestation of the Buddha way. Cooking this leaf of kale is a manifestation of the Buddha way." To nourish people is not to simply fill their bellies. It is the whole nourishment of the body and mind. If there's anger and confusion in the preparation of the food, people will eat anger and confusion. If there's wisdom, compassion, and love, we eat wisdom, compassion, and love. Life nourishes us, and we in turn nourish each other. And we turn our lives to the 10,000 things. Well, I have a little example of how we nourish each other. As some of you know, I'm working with children, with learning disabled children, and we had Valentine's Day, so they decided to give Miss Karen a little gift, and so they did, and I told them I was going to share it. It will also serve as a mnemonic device for the next point that Dogen makes. Mm-hmm. Well, as you know, I study Chinese, so it was always a little strange for me to have the separation of mind and heart, because in China you think with your heart, xin li xiang, and that's the original character of the following state of minds, which actually should be states of heart that Dogen describes. So I'll call them heart, there are different translations. So Dogen again, he says, when we train in any of the offices in the monastery, we should do so with a joyful heart, or a joyful mind, if you like the translation better, a motherly heart, and a vast heart, or a big heart. Now what does he mean by that? A joyful heart rejoices and recognizes meaning You should consider that were you born in the realm of gods, you would be absorbed by indulgence with the qualities of that realm, so that you would not rouse the recognition of uncovering the way, and so have no opportunity to practice. Now, who would not like to live in the realm of the gods and indulge all day long? But come to think about it, it is precious to practice and work, offer your service to the three jewels, the Buddha, the Dharma, and the Sangha. He also says that we should rejoice and be happy that we haven't been born not only in the realm of the gods, but we haven't been born in the realm of hell beings or hungry ghosts or the realm of animals, because the same thing, we would not be able to serve and work for the three treasures. There's a quote out of the Zen Monastic Standards, which was written in 1102 and sounds just incredibly modern. It says, the monastic community is the most excellent of all things, because those who live thus life beyond the narrowness of social fabrication. Well, that is the joyful part. Of course, when we practice in the kitchen, we do not always think about not having been born in the realm of gods or in the realm of animals or hell beings, but it certainly helps to remember that you need a joyful heart. There are many things that happen. You scorch yourself on a hot pot, you cut your finger, you have people coming in and out and complaining about all kinds of things. A joyful heart and recognizing that it's an opportunity to serve is incredibly helpful. Actually, at one point, I calculated if I were to do every single zazen for the next 40 years, which I think is my expected lifespan, I only would have another 400 zazens to do. That is not much. What's that? 400 zazens? Nothing. So, I like numbers. I like to do the statistics. So, I'm happy to rejoice in the kitchen, and also know my helpers and assistants in the kitchen have the same attitude, rejoicing in being able to serve. So that was the first of our hearts. Now the second heart is the motherly heart, which I don't like the translation because I know too many tiger moms, and a motherly heart is not always that nice. Actually, they quite often withhold food from the kids until they finish homework, so I would rather translate that into grandmotherly heart. And I think Suzuki Roshi did that because he said it's the heart of an old woman. They are kind by nature. Now, I believe that more than in tiger moms. So it says, the kind heart is the old woman's heart, is a heart which maintains the three jewels as a parent cares for the child. A parent raises a child with deep love regardless of poverty or difficulties. Their hearts cannot be understood by another. Only a parent can understand it. A parent protects the child from heat or cold before worrying about whether they themselves are hot or cold. This kind of care can only be understood by those who have given rise to it and realized only by those who practice it. This, brought to the fullest, is how you must care for water and rice as though they were your own children. Well, having this motherly and compassionate heart is absolutely crucial working in the kitchen, because otherwise it would drive you crazy. As the people who have worked with me in the kitchen on very busy zazens all know, we have all kind of visitors. Usually the third day of zazen, people reach a cracking point. They look at themselves a little bit too much and bad things come up, so they try to escape in the kitchen. And they either try to help, but when they're very angry, I try to find my motherly heart and try not to hand them a sharp knife when they do that, so they get to peel the garlic with their hands. That's compassion, not giving them a knife when they're angry. And there are other people that just need to talk. Now the kitchen is like a sandal. You're not supposed to talk. However, in some cases, people would explode if they didn't. So breaking your rule and keeping the conversation as short as possible, but with that motherly heart in mind, I think it is helpful to let people talk at times. Also, when people show up and tell you, I cannot eat this, I cannot eat that, I'm very allergic, I'm gluten intolerant, and I would die immediately. And then 10 minutes later, you see them in the corner of the room at a tea table, stuffing their faces with clearly marked non-gluten-free cookies. It's not the time to throw a knife at them, even if you spend 3 hours in the kitchen making gluten-free cookies for them. It is trying to understand and embrace them with compassion. It is things that come up for them. It is not about an allergy. It's not about gluten intolerance. It's about things that come up and arise for them, and we all have that. Also working in the kitchen. I found myself at one point trying to slap my rice cooker because it was so slow. Mm-hmm. Well, poor rice cooker. Didn't deserve it. But it's good to keep the second heart in mind. And then there's the third heart. Just the big heart, the vast heart. The big mind that is just like a great expanse of ocean or a towering mountain. It views everything from the most inclusive and broadest perspective, and this vast heart does not regard a gram as too light or a ton as too heavy. It does not follow the sounds of spring or try to nest in a spring garden. It does not darken with the colors of autumn. See the changes of the seasons as all one movement. Understand light and heavy in relation to each other, within a view which includes both. That's the vast heart. And for me, in my practice in the kitchen, it means to try to see the bigger picture, which again is under the pressure of working in the kitchen and having 30 hungry people waiting out there while we're running out of gas. Not always that easy, but it's very, very, very precious practice. So the next time when you walk into a kitchen during the sesshin, or when you see our tenzin now, bow to them. Appreciate their work, appreciate their practice. And if you have a chance ever, join them. Find the 16-foot golden body and a kale leaf. It was definitely worth it. I do have some more stories to talk about, but maybe you would rather ask questions.
I was wondering if you could repeat the big heart, the last one.
The big heart, the vast heart, the big mind is like a great expanse of ocean or a towering mountain. It views everything from the most inclusive and broadest perspective. This vast heart does not regard a gram as too light or a ton as too heavy. It does not follow the sounds of spring or try to nest in a spring garden. It does not darken with the colors of autumn. See the changes of the seasons as all one movement. Understand light and heavy in relation to each other within a view that includes both.
Could you read the first one, too, please?
The joyful
first
heart. Joyful heart?
Joyful heart.
The joyful heart rejoices and recognizes meaning. You should consider that were you to be born in the realm of the gods, you would be absorbed in indulgence with the qualities of that realm, so that you would not rouse the recognition of uncovering the way and so have no opportunity to practice. And so, how could you use cooking as an offering to the three jewels? Nothing is more excellent than the three jewels of the Buddha, the teachings and a community of those who practice and realize the way. Neither being the king of gods nor a world ruler can even compare with the three jewels. And just to close the circle, shall I repeat the motherly heart too?
Mm-hmm.
And the motherly heart, or the kind heart, the old woman's heart, is a heart which maintains the three jewels as a parent cares for the child. A parent raises a child with deep love, regardless of poverty or difficulties. Their hearts cannot be understood by another. Only a parent can understand it. A parent protects their child from heat or cold before worrying about whether they themselves are hot or cold. This kind of care can only be understood by those who have given rise to it and realized only by those who practice it. This, brought to its fullest, is how you must care for water and rice as though they were your children.
Just one comment on the mind versus heart. I read in a book by Maizumi Roshi where he in his Japanese did not distinguish mind, heart, or spirit. He said he uses them interchangeably more or less. So, interesting.
Thank you. Yeah, I'm used to just the heart, because spirit, this different character in Chinese, at least the spirit, which is quite distinct from heart. And I think in this context, heart is just more appropriate. It is, and it's more of a heart practice in that way too, so that is how I feel about it.
I'm curious what the greatest challenge of the Tenzo is, typically, in the Shishin.
Overcoming your tiredness. It is hard physical work that quite often people do not realize it because they sit all day. And lifting pots, very heavy pots, and chopping all day long is physically demanding. And I know my Tenzo helpers know that. I mean, we carry these gigantic pots around with food for 30 to 40 people. That is the most challenging part. Mm. Keeping the happy, the joyful heart and the vast heart has become much easier over time. But it's paying attention not to get injured while cooking. That is the most challenging. Yeah, I had enough bloody fingers and burns. I think I have a few scars here from a few machines, but that is part of it and is a learning curve. But as long as you have the three hearts in mind, it is all bearable.
I'm so happy that you're here.
Thank you.
I look forward to your meals, and this role that you play here is a real attraction to, and an incredible attribute to, I think, everyone.
Mm. Thank you. It is like giving and taking. I'm happy to serve the three treasures.
And you're a good cook.
Yeah. Just happens. Well, if nobody has any more questions, I could just quickly read one of Dogen's encounters with a Tenzo. I'm sure many of you heard that. Already know the story, but it's always nice to hear it over and over again. So this is in May of 1223, Dogen speaking. I was staying aboard a ship at Qingyuan. Once I was speaking with the captain, when a monk about 60 years of age came aboard to buy mushrooms from the ship's Japanese merchants. I asked him to have tea with me and asked him where he was from. He was the Tenzo from Ayuwangshan. He said, I come from Shishu, but it is now 40 years since I've left there, and I'm 61. I have practiced in several monasteries. When the Venerable Dao Quan became abbot at Guiyun Temple of Ayuwang, I went there, but I just idled the time away, not knowing what I was doing. Fortunately, I was appointed Tenzo last year, and when the summer training period ended, tomorrow is May 5th, that's the celebration for the Dragon Boat Festival, may I add, but I don't have any special offerings for the monks, so I thought I'd make a nice noodle soup for them. We didn't have any mushrooms, so I came here to give the monks something from the Ten Directions. Dogen asks, when did you leave Ayuwang Shan? I ask. After the noon meal. How far is it from here? Around 12 miles. When are you going back to the monastery? As soon as I bought the mushrooms. I said, as we have had the unexpected opportunity to meet and talk like this today, I would like you to stay a while longer and allow me to offer Zen Master Tenzo a meal. Oh, I am so sorry, but I just can't. If I'm not there to prepare tomorrow's meal, it won't go well. But surely someone in the monastery knows how to cook. If you're not there, it can't make such a difference to everyone. The monk said, I have been given this responsibility in my old age, and it is this old man's practice. How can I leave to others what I should do myself? As well, when I left, I didn't ask for permission to be gone overnight. Dogen says, Venerable Sir, why put yourself to the difficulty of working as a cook in your old age? Why not just do Zazen and study the koan of the ancient masters? The Tenzo laughed for a long time and then he said, My foreign friend, it seems you don't really understand practice or the words of the ancients. Hearing the elder monk's word, I felt ashamed and surprised. I asked, what is practice? What are words? The Tenzo said, keep asking and penetrate this question and then you will be someone who understands. But I didn't know what he was talking about, and so the Tenzo said, if you don't understand, then come and see me at Ayuwang Shan sometime. We'll talk about the meaning of words. Having said this, he stood up and said, it will be getting dark soon. I best hurry. And he left. In July of the same year, I was staying at Tiantong Shan when the Tenzo of Ayuwang Shan came to see me and said, after the summer training period is over, I'm going to retire as Tenzo and go back to my native region. I heard from a fellow monk that you were here, and so I came to see you and how you were making out. I was overjoyed. I served him tea and we sat down to talk. When I brought up our discussion on the ship about words and practice, the Tenzo said, if you want to understand words, you must look into what words are. If you want to practice, you must understand what practice is. I asked, what are words? The Tenzo said, 1, 2, 3, 4, 5. I asked again, what is practice? Tenzo said, everywhere, nothing is hidden. We talked about many other things, but I won't go into that. Suffice to say that without the Tenzo's kind help, I would not have had any understanding of words of practice. When I told my late teacher, Myosen, about this, he was very pleased. Later, I found a verse that Yudo wrote for a disciple. It's a nice Tang poem, and unfortunately it doesn't rhyme in English. 1735, what you search for cannot be grasped. As the night deepens, the moon brightens over the ocean. The black dragon's jewel is found in every wave. Looking for the moon, it is here in this wave and the next.